Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of The Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is The Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Well, it's a little weird because I've been here since like almost before noon today.
And wow.
I'm working a little harder than I'm used to, I know.
Like a regular person.
Wow, that's odd.
I'm getting a little tired here. I don't know if I'm going to make it through the next 3 hours, but I'm going to try. I actually had a podcast to record this morning with my friend Vance Crowe. When that is available, we will blast that out. Vance is very interesting. You know, he does those legacy interviews. He sits down maybe with your parents, and then they can leave a video history of their lives. It's really cool. But we went down some rabbit holes today, like on AI and the differences between boomers and Gen Z and, you know, socioeconomic issues that are already kind of tearing into the country with an inability for young people to buy homes and other things. So we really had a great conversation. But I've been going since this morning. And it was funny because
how about that,
I
Fred, since this morning, yeah. Like the rest of us.
What I mean by that is I've been revved up since this morning.
Oh,
okay. Sometimes it takes me a little time to get, and then Fred knows this because I'll call him and I'll be all lit up about something and I'll usually drop a bunch of F bombs or something like that. And
good morning,
you know,
Fred.
Very entertained by it. He's used to it by now. He's worked with me for 20 years, so he knows that. But so I walked into Vance's office. He's over at Brentwood Plaza, and we were set for recording at 10 a.m. And I said, well, you got me in a really fired up mood because I just had this customer service experience that is just killing me right now. So I just wanted to share this as we get started, my anger, because my anger started this morning. So I have an irrigation company, all right? I told you a little bit about this, Sue.
Yes.
Okay, so I have sprinklers, in-ground sprinklers, and they came with the house, right? And thank goodness, because the neighbors I have who don't have that, the grass gets all, you know, dead and doesn't look very good. Even if they use sprinklers.
That's like us,
like,
Fred.
Like okay. Mine.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Fine. Mm-hmm. Am I wading into elitism territory just by saying I have an irrigation system?
No way. You're
really?
Already waist deep. Have
just
you
because of that?
Had that on any other house?
No.
Okay.
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 Is that so that puts me into a separate class because I have
yes.
irrigation? It came with the house.
Yes.
It's not, was it my fault?
It's just a person of means.
Thank you, Fred. It's just a person of means.
So every year, if you have an irrigation system, you have to do, first of all, they have to come and they have to turn it off in the fall, right? To make sure that the lines don't freeze and all that.
Well, that makes sense.
Right. And then they have to come back and they have to test and they turn on. You also have to have a backflow test. Now, I don't even know what that means outside of the fact that they have to do something and they have to prove to St. Louis County that I've had a backflow test, right?
Uh-huh.
Have no idea what that means.
I assume that's literal.
Yeah.
Right? Do they just anyway, yes.
Use your imagination on that.
Yes.
Anyway, so 6 weeks ago, and I'm not going to mention the irrigation company, but they come out, same people I've used for years, right, at this house, smaller business, okay?
Okay.
And the two guys come out to test the system, and they're, you know, they open up the valves, and I have no water pressure in the front of the house. I have plenty of water pressure in the back of the house, but none in the front. So they're trying to figure it out. They can't figure it out. They're like, oh, you know, the dude who kind of runs the company, again, I'm not going to use names here. We'll call him Bob. Bob's going to have to be the guy that, you know, diagnoses this. He's got experience. They couldn't figure it out. And they're like, well, it could be what happens in situations like this is there's a root that might pinch the line. There's a kink in the line. I'm like, oh God, what am I getting into here? So I get on the horn and, first, let me just say this. So he's like, well, you know, the kids are there, these kids who are, you know, working for them. Bob's got to come out and look at this. Bob or Bill, those are the two guys. I'm making up names. So they, I don't get a call back or anything. And then I call the office and I'm like, hey, they were supposed to, Bob was supposed to call me to set up an appointment, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So this is, again, 6 weeks ago. So they set an appointment up for Monday of this week. That was the earliest I could get, right? And I'm being patient with this because I feel like I have to, because there's not a lot of maybe there's competition out there, but it's one of those things where even if I went to a different company right now, it probably would take me longer to get the service, right? Mm. All right, so Monday, Becky's at home. They're supposed to come between 2:30 and 3:30. No one shows up. I get a message. I didn't realize a message had come in that said that they couldn't come because it was raining, right? Okay, so if you had an appointment with a company, this is where I'm going to get to the question here. Company was supposed to come and see you on Monday, visit, whether it's HVAC or anything like that, right? They couldn't do it. They canceled. What would the next step in that process be?
Well, alert them.
No, no, no. Like, who would alert
reschedule.
Who?
Reschedule.
Oh, what's that word there?
Oh, boy.
R? Is it start with an R?
Uh-huh.
What is that?
Reschedule.
Reschedule. Do you think that the person who runs the business would perhaps reach out to the client and say, I'm sorry, we missed the appointment on Saturday. When can we reschedule? Or on Monday, rather. So here we are a couple days later. I call this morning. I'm like, hey, I said, and this is where I'm like, I'm at the level here where customer service is not satisfactory to me. And I said, they were supposed to come out Monday. Okay, let me see. The first day I have is June 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that's when I lost it. I'm like, June 23rd? I said, Bob should not be out here on June 23rd. Bob should be here freaking today. Like today or tomorrow, because he was supposed to be here on Monday. So I said, and I'm at this point, I'm yelling, right? I'm like, I'll tell you what, here's what you're going to do. You call Bob and then you call me back and you tell me how we're going to resolve this. So I get called back about 10 minutes later. Well, here's what we can do. We can keep you on the schedule for the 23rd. And if there's any cancellations, then we can move you up. I said, that's the best you're going to do for me right now. You're basically telling me. And then she goes, this is what she says. And Bob said that if you can find someone to do it quicker, then go ahead and do that. Well, what is that? That's the guy basically saying, we don't want you as a customer anymore,
well,
isn't it?
It just means they're all busy this time of year.
Well, I don't care how busy they are. They still have a level of customer service that they're supposed to provide. And it was terrible. But in situations like this, and this is one of the reasons I want to talk about it, is you're kind of pigeonholed. I think a lot of people are because I can't get someone to come in there any sooner, probably, So I'm, and he knows that,
that's
right?
Why
so I'm
he kind said
of beholden. But to run a business that way is just baffling to me. It really is. So, you know, I think we all experience this, and you certainly see it in retail outlets where you have terrible customer service, but it's more frustrating when you don't have competition and you can't really tap into that. And by the way, here's another thing what they said, and you guys might remember this. A year ago, this is good, you know, maybe mention this for other people out there who've had this experience. The first thing that Bob, not his real name, asked me is, did you have fiber cable that was installed? And I said, yeah, I did. And he said, well, that could be it right there. But I said, wait a second, that was installed last June and it worked fine for the rest of the summer. But then he tells me, okay, we got to dig around. We got to find this if it's not a root.
Oh.
And then at one point he says, and that kind of starts at $4,000. I'm like, what? I said, I think I can go to Menards and get a sprinkler like the common folk. I guess I have to call you guys the common folk
that's,
now, right? Because
that's who
I'm an elitist
we are, Fred.
And just run it that way. But anyway, these are hashtag Mark Reardon problems. I know that. Mm-hmm. But it's just the customer service thing that just nags on me. And at one point, the woman's like, I'm not going to let you abuse me. I'm like, well, do your freaking job. Do your job. I didn't use profanity, but I'm like, this is utterly ridiculous how I'm being treated as a paying customer that you can't reach out to me. And then she goes, Bob says you never answer your phone. I'll never answer my phone. I can show you my phone. There's no missed calls from you guys, right? So that's a bunch of crap. I wish I could say the company, but I can't. I wish I could say the company. If anyone else out there can help me, please let me know. We got a lot of things to get to today. Ethan looked at the sheet and he told Fred, who is a Hall of Famer, of course.
Yes.
He said, Fred, this is amazing today.
How about old Fred Bottenheimer over there,
go,
ladies
Fred.
And gentlemen?
We have a state senator in Nick Shore coming up here. We're going to talk a little bit about some budgetary concerns about some numbers. Scott Fitzpatrick, the auditor, expressing concerns about a looming budget disaster. So we'll talk to him about that. We have Congressman Bob Onder. He was at the Southern Poverty Law Center hearing yesterday. I played some audio from that, and that was pretty compelling. There's also some things to talk about him relating to some other bills and then also the primary results. Of course, Graham Plattner is moving on. He won the race in Maine. That was not unexpected.
Wow.
He was supposed to. By the way, did you see what happened? They had a governor's race in South Carolina, and Nancy Mace, who, you know, she was a rising star in the Republican Party. She's a very attractive woman, well-spoken, you know, fireball. But then she went all down the Epstein files route and lost favor with Trump. She got 12.5% of the vote. This was someone who was, you know,
wow,
at a trajectory that was a lot higher than getting 12% of the vote running for governor of.
I think she came in fifth.
Yeah, she did. Like, wow. way fifth. It was crazy. This is the night, and I've been to this, and I think it's really cool. This is the night of the congressional baseball game in D.C., and Eric Schmidt, our senator, is really one of the stars of the team. It's a great event. It's done for charity at Nationals Ballpark. They usually get, you know, about 25,000 people. All the staffers from the Hill come over. They've been practicing for months. You might remember the baseball shooting that took place, and Steve Scalise was shot. Rodney Davis, former congressman from Illinois, was taking batting practice, about to jump in the box that day when that shooting took place. Scalise is still on the roster. Rodney used to be the catcher before he was out of Congress. Our other friend John Shimkus was a pitcher, and the Republicans are kind of in a really good spot right now because they have a good pitcher. The Democrats for years had a guy that had, I think, played collegiate baseball, and they just got smoked, but they're pretty good right now, and Eric's really put a lot of work in. I mean, if you've followed him on social media, he does a lot of stuff that he's posting from the cage work he's doing. He's in great physical shape right now, so it'll be fun to talk to him at 4 o'clock. Alex Rich will be here. We visit with him on a Thursday afternoon.
Wednesday.
Thank you, Fred. Dwayne Patterson from Hot Air. And then we have the Attorney General of Missouri, Catherine Hanaway, on this afternoon as well. So there's a bunch of things that I want to touch on that I haven't got to. There's more Scott Pelley stuff. There's a bunch of fallout from, you know, obviously from Grant Plattner and what happened there. Still some questions about California. I guess maybe the thing that was made official between when we started the show yesterday and today is that Steve Hilton is going to be in the runoff against. And I spent like way too much of my time in the office earlier trying to figure out how to pronounce Javier Becerra's name, because I've been saying it Xavier Becerra because it's spelled with an X.
Oh.
And then a lot of people say Javier. So I've heard it both ways. Well, we looked it up and Wikipedia told us that the pronunciation is Javier Becerra. But he was not like exactly very popular in the Biden administration. Look, I made a wager with two of our roundtable participants, Greg Keller and Jeff Smith, last week. It was likely ill-fated because that's what I do. But Jeff gave me 3-1 odds on Hilton becoming the governor. So in other words, I put 100 up and I get 300 if Hilton wins, and then I have to pay him 100 if I lose. I'm expecting to lose, and I have the same bet, at least even money, with Keller. But I just think that Steve Hilton has tapped into something that potentially could be unique in California because it's common sense stuff. It's not ideological. The problem is Trump, and the problem is inflation and gas prices and all that, because he'll probably, as a Republican, get tagged with a lot of that stuff. Right? They're going to try to align him with Trump as much as they can. But I think that they're, you know, it's a different climate in California, and I would at least give him a shot. I thought the numbers from the primary were rather interesting and a little higher than I think people anticipate. All right, we're off and rolling here. Nick Shore is coming up.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Next. One of the other things I'm going to cover is the continued aftermath and fallout of the Carmelo Anthony verdict down in Texas. And it is, I guess I shouldn't be shocked anymore. Jasmine Crockett, our own, you know, star from MICDS down there representing Houston, complaining about this guy going to prison for stabbing a white kid in the heart. I said this yesterday. Look, I think the opening statements, even by the prosecution, that case has nothing to do with race. There's no racial component whatsoever.
Yes.
It was a kid that did something and he threatened the white kid and then he pulled out a knife and stabbed the kid in the heart. I mean, this shouldn't have honestly even gone to trial. He probably would have been better off had he just pleaded, and I don't even think he would have gotten 35 years had he done that. But now he gets 35 years, and they're saying he's going to appeal. On what basis? This is such an easy, cut-and-dried case. The defense hardly put up anything. I mean, they said it was self-defense, but they didn't put any witnesses. But now you have another situation where there are people in this country who haven't followed the particulars of this case, and they think that this was some sort of white supremacy thing. If a white kid did the same thing to a white kid, or if a white kid did the same thing to a black kid, or if a black kid did the same thing to a black kid, the results would be exactly the same. Okay, it's a murder charge. Mm. He murdered him. him. Why he did it, I don't know. But, I mean, there was no way this jury could have gone in another direction. I mean, they gave him the manslaughter possibility, but they said, no, this is murder. You know, they wanted to punish him. So they are. State Senator Nick Schwora is back with us this afternoon. Hello, Nick. How are you?
Hey, I am just glad I'm not down on those hot-ass streets in Houston.
Yeah, no kidding about that. Look, we got a story that cleared in our local paper not too long ago that says that Scott Fitzpatrick, the auditor, is saying it's imperative that Governor Mike Kehoe use his veto pen this month to slash millions of dollars in funding to address a fiscal cliff facing the state. So the quote from Scott Fitzpatrick is, the numbers are right there in black and white, and unfortunately lots of red, and they show a trend of deficit spending that cannot be sustained and continue to jeopardize our state's financial health. So as a member of the legislature, you are constitutionally mandated to balance the budget. So what are we looking at here with possible cuts? And some of this obviously was discussed during the session and anticipated as well.
Yeah, you know, I think this is we've turned the car around, if that makes sense, because the trajectory of where we were going over the past 10 years, we've seen the budget grow over 104%, which is just unsustainable. I agree with the auditor. And even when the auditor was the budget chairman, when I was in the House with him, we would work and we would try to cut. And you had budget chairs in the Senate that, even though they were Republican, they spent like Democrats. And we finally got a new appropriations chair in the Senate this year. And for the first time in my tenure, we actually cut over $4 billion. Now, that's still not enough. We're going in the right direction. But I do hope that Governor Kehoe looks at a lot of this spending to see what we can trim. Because, look, we got a couple things on the ballot coming up. We've got the tax cuts. We've got IP reform, which is one of the reasons we're in this hot mess that we're in right now, to use a Jasmine Crockett reference. it's a hot mess that we're in because the initiative petition program has allowed these out-of-state millionaires to handcuff us with things like the expansion of Obamacare, which Scott Fitzpatrick mentioned in his report, with able-bodied adults that are still living in mom's basement that we have to cover with Obamacare. So, I'm very hopeful that the governor and his team are going to look over this and deliver a budget that is one of the lowest budgets that we've seen in the last several years. But I'm encouraging the body to stand with Scott Fitzpatrick, encourage the governor, encourage the House and the Senate to cut even more than we did this year. Going into next session, let's cut $5 billion. Let's cut $10 billion, because guess what? We're going to have to coincide these income tax cuts if that does pass, and I hope it does. I hope we are on a path to zero. But if we get there, it's going to have to come hand in hand with a lot of spending cuts.
Is there an obvious target area for those spending cuts, or would those be spread around, in your opinion?
Well, I think it's going to have to be spread around. You know, with the way that the public schools are funded right now, there is a working group, there is a task force to try to figure out, is there a different way to do it? Because quite frankly, when you keep throwing more and more and more money at the public school education system and the results still suck, we've got to start thinking outside of the box. But things like that, things like the Medicaid expansion, the Obamacare expansion that was put in to the Constitution just a couple of years ago, and what the Supreme Court has said we can and can't do with that, we are kind of handcuffed, and that's why they're dipping into the general revenue to pay the state portion of the Medicaid expansion. Now, a lot of these handouts that we've seen with the last budget chair, with Lincoln Huff, who's a Republican, he kept working with the Democrats and sending millions upon millions of dollars for pet projects in their districts. Thankfully, Governor Kehoe last year line item vetoed a ton of that, but there's still a little bit of that in the budget that was passed this year. And I'm hopeful that the governor is going to line item veto a lot of that. But we're going to have to start looking at a lot of these programs and services and, you know, put the test that I always apply. Is this something that the government is obligated to do by way of the Constitution, or should the private sector be picking up the slack here?
State Senator Nick Schwora is here. Let me ask you about the income tax cut. You know that I'm a proponent of it, and I think it's big and it's bold, and it's something that would propel the state forward. And there's a lot of misinformation out there on the part of the opponents of this. Now, I don't, Nick, and I'm wrong about this, so maybe this is going to help it. But I spoke with the governor last week. I don't think this thing's going to pass, and I think it's going to unfortunately fail quite miserably. But how does this not feed into the opponents by giving them a narrative that says, look, we already have these revenue issues and you want to cut the income tax? And I get it. You know, I understand the issue that it's a phase out and everything and there's offsets. But I think it also gives opponents of the measure, you know, more of a narrative here.
Yeah, you know, they're going to use it. I guarantee you that they're going to use it to their favor. But look, we've got something based upon this this amendment that we're going to vote on in August is based upon the same thing that we have statutorily right now. So even though you've had all of this crazy spending over the past several years, which I have voted against time and time again, we've continued to see growth in our state, which has triggered from 6% income tax slowly down to the 4.7% that we're at now. Now, there's a floor statutorily that we're going to hit at 4.5% when and if we get there. And I think that's got to be the backup plan here. You know, I hope we throw the kitchen sink at this thing, that we can actually get this put into the Constitution. Because if we do this statutorily, if we come back and do it statutorily, like we've done with the capital gains tax, like we've done with all the different tax cuts for senior citizens, a different administration could change that in a heartbeat. We've seen so many different states that swing back to a Democrat leadership, and they outdo everything that the Republicans have done just within a couple weeks. So that's one of the more important things that the supporters of this amendment of getting rid of the income tax have to stress, is that, look, we're this path to zero, letting us compete with states like Florida and Tennessee and Texas and all these other states around us that are growing rapidly and attracting business and returning that money back to the working class in those states. They need to put that in the Constitution in the state of Missouri, so we don't have a Governor Nixon type or a Gavin Newsom type that's going to come in one day. And I know it's probably far from today when the Democrats take over, as crazy as they are prioritizing the woke gender madness over the working class. But that day could come.
Are you heading off to Maine to campaign for Graham Platner?
You know, I'm not a fan of Nazis. My grandpa fought against them in World War II, and it's just strange that the Democrats, who believe all women just a couple of years ago, are now saying, yeah, you know, not those women. And yeah, who cares about the Nazis? People can change.
You know, I'm told by people much smarter than I that Susan Collins will still win that seat. It's going to be a fight. They're going to spend some money. But, man, we got to hope that even Trump, you know, said, look, we're not on the same page, Susan Collins, all the time, but she's not crazy. And I think that kind of says a lot right there. Nick Short, great to have you on. I appreciate it. You have a good weekend.
You too.
All right, take care.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free, so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
No, I spent a little bit of time on this yesterday, and it was a great hearing, and I had an audio, you know, abundance of audio yesterday. I didn't get to a lot of it, but Brian Fair is the guy who is the interim president for the Southern Poverty Law Center, and they had a hearing yesterday before the House Judiciary Committee. Congressman Bob Ondra is on that committee. Here's his question to Mr. Fair.
Mr. Fair, the SPLC labeled Charlie Kirk and his organization dangerous extremists in its Hate Watch newsletter, and Charlie Kirk was assassinated the very next day. Do you regret signing off on that newsletter?
Congressman Odner, what I regret is the political violence in this country on any side of the aisle.
Do you regret naming Turning Point USA a hate group several months earlier?
What I regret, again, is the political violence in this country. And
are you willing to take any responsibility for the assassination of Charlie Kirk? I'll take that as a no.
Look, this was quite shocking, some of the lack of questions. Congressman Ondra is with us this afternoon. I mean, that was just one small example, Bob, as you know, of that guy unable or unwilling to answer a lot of questions that were very, very easy.
Well, that's right, Mark. It's great to be back. You know, we had a previous hearing with on the topic of SPLC, Southern Poverty Law Center, which was once a useful a civil rights organization helping poor blacks with legal representation of the Old South. But they have truly, truly lost their way. The last hearing, the Democrats put forward a witness who wasn't from SPLC, and of course they essentially pleaded the fifth on everything, or pleaded ignorance on everything. Here we actually had the CEO of the Southern Poverty Law Center, and as much as Mr. Fair claims to decry political violence, the SPLC has been in the business of inciting political violence with its its hate map. Of course, long before the Charlie Kirk assassination, they inspired an armed attack on the Family Research Council, in which one of the security guards was seriously injured. Really, the Southern Poverty Law Center, we've known for a long time, is a defamation machine. And now we know they've been indicted by the Justice Department for bank and wire fraud. Look, it's time to end the SPLC's scam once and for all.
I think they even had Missouri on, you know, this hate list or avoid Missouri list because of some of the things that happened in the aftermath of Mike Brown or some of this other nonsense. But really, what has been exposed, and I know that he was grilled on this yesterday, is the money that they spent from donors. And he's trying to defend this as something that organizations do when they pay, you know, informants to work inside and infiltrate organizations. And clearly the FBI does that at times. But this is a group that's supposed to be fighting hate, and they're actually funding people. And whether they were doing some sort of investigative work or not, they weren't being honest with the people around them and with the donors, and they still want to defend this, which is just kind of incredible, Bob. And you heard that all throughout that hearing yesterday with Mr. Fair, unable to answer real easy questions, yes or no questions that everyone posed to him, and he deflected and he deflected.
Well, he absolutely did. Yes, the Southern Poverty Law Center is manufacturing the very hate that they claim to be fighting, but more importantly, fundraising over. They spent $4.1 million funding various actual hate and neo-Nazi and white supremacist groups, but they weren't just paying informants. $4.1 million would pay a lot of informants. They were actually paying these extremists to get people, for instance, to the Charlottesville rally. They were paying neo-Nazi groups. One person, one informant, so-called, wanted out and said, no, I don't want to do this anymore. And they paid them more money to stay in the group and continue to cause trouble. So the indictment clearly lays out how, you know, the very large sums of money that they were paying for these insiders in these groups. And they weren't just gathering information and passing it on to the FBI. They were encouraging violence, including at Charlottesville, where one person was killed. And by the way, they were definitely money laundering. They were moving. They had shell companies that had names like, you know, Marine and Lawn Service and so on, to hide the purpose of the money that they were moving around, moving to these extremists that they claim to be fighting.
Is there a next step in all of this or not at this point?
Yes, I think the next big step, I think, first of all, exposing the SPLC, because, you know, the SPLC has been used by some investment companies, including Fidelity, by many companies in directing charitable giving. And,
really
is kind of a. Yeah, it's kind of a gold standard. So if you had a donor-directed mutual fund or a fund with Fidelity, for instance, any group on the SPLC's hate list was not eligible for your directed contributions and so on. Many large corporations followed the SPLC's hate list and blacklisted those companies. So I think many companies are now on to the SPLC. They're no longer following that. But SPLC needs to be exposed, but they were engaging in criminal activity. The next step is really the Justice Department to pursue their prosecution.
On the indictment, right. Congressman Bob Onder is back with us. All right, so the president has signed a $70 billion bill for the funding of immigration enforcement agencies through the end of his term. This was not an easy thing to secure. It passed the Senate last week. I think you guys voted on it yesterday. It now is solidified. So what would you say about that battle and finally getting that across the table to the president's desk?
Well, yeah, Mark, as you know, I mean, it's a big victory that we finally got it done. But this just shows how much the Democrats are putting illegal aliens first over the interests of the American people. On April 30th, Congress passed a bill funding the Department of Homeland Security, but not ICE and Border Patrol, because the Democrats, not a single Democrat, would vote to enforce our immigration laws. that was April 30th, about a month and a half ago, after a 76-day shutdown, longest shutdown of a department in American history. And now it took us another month and a half to get this bill passed without a single Democrat vote to fund the brave men and women who enforce our immigration
laws. Not even Fetterman, right, in the Senate voted for it.
I don't believe even Fetterman. Not a single House member yesterday, but I don't think even Fetterman. So it's very clear. The Democrats have been the defund the police party, and now they are the defund immigration enforcement party. This is very dangerous because we have prioritized deporting criminal illegal aliens. The whole sanctuary city issue is about these sanctuary cities, Democrat-run cities and states where a third of the country live, where they will not turn criminal illegal aliens over to ICE and Border Patrol for deportation. This is lawlessness at its worst, and it is just pathetic that the Democrats put illegal aliens over the safety and security of the American people.
It's unreal. I can't believe that they keep doing it. What happened, though, Bob, with the controversial $1.8 billion so-called anti-weaponization fund? That got very, got a lot of attention, a lot of pushback from Republicans. Was that included in this or not?
Yeah, that was not, Mark. That was, something the president had floated. At first, the White House seemed to very much want to have that $1.8 billion fund to compensate victims of weaponization of government. Look, I've talked to lawyers who represent some people who were very much victimized, including the St. Louis's own Mark McCloskey, who represents some of these victims. And there are ways in which they can pursue, damages for ways that they were harmed. Certainly, the most well-known is a 1983 action by which you sue a government for deprivation of your constitutional rights. So, finally, the White House backed off and said, okay, go ahead and pass the ICE and Border Patrol funding without the weaponization fund. So, no, that was not included.
Well, good.
And that made it a little easier to move forward.
Right, I was not a fan of that. All right, we have to talk about Iran, though, because obviously the president seems to not really be concerned about the timetable here. I think that the situation here diplomatically, I don't know why we feel that we're close to a deal. Maybe there's a miracle and we're close to a deal. But, there keeps being this promise from the White House and from the president. He said it again today. Gas prices are going to plummet when this thing is over. Two questions. When is it going to be over? And then I don't think gas prices are going to plummet, Bob. I think we're stuck with these through the summer.
Well, OK, I think, first of all, I don't know when this is going to be over. we had a fragile ceasefire. Some exchange of weaponry, but relative calm.
Yeah, we may have more this afternoon, though. He's promising this afternoon. It was 4 o'clock yesterday that they hit a couple of targets, so we could have action
exactly
this afternoon.
I know, and President Trump promised a very big escalation this afternoon. That originally triggered by yesterday's downing of a Black
right.
Hawk helicopter.
Right.
So I don't know when this is over. The sooner the better. Obviously, under the right conditions, the Strait of Hormuz has to open. Oil has to keep get flowing again. But I think I think the once the world oil market realizes that the Strait is back open, we'll definitely have a backlog, no question. 20% of the world's oil moves through the Strait of Hormuz. But I think we'll see, just like even a optimistic remark by President Trump will improve the price of crude and gas prices at the pump for a couple days. I think once the conflict's actually over, we'll see a big fall in oil and gas prices. Maybe not to where we were a year ago, but I think things would indeed improve significantly after the hostilities end.
I have Senator Schmidt coming on to preview the congressional baseball game tonight. Are you going to be attending that game by any chance?
I will. I'll be a little late to it. I have an event right before, but then I will be there, and I predict a big victory by the Republicans.
It's a lot of fun. I was lucky to go one year. I sat with my dear friend Kenny Hulsoff, who you probably know. He was a member of Congress as well. And it's just great. They packed that stadium pretty well. It's for charity. It's really kind of a fun event. It's on TV tonight. Chad Pergram from Fox is a great play-by-play guy. So the senator is going to join us. But, Bob, have a great time tonight. It's always a great event.
Thank you. All right. Have a great evening. Yep. Now it will be a great game.
Take care. One of those days where we are really, really loaded up. I have Senator Schmidt on deck to talk about the congressional baseball game. There's a story that was released today by the state auditor, Scott Fitzpatrick. We already talked about him relating to the budget. But, Sue, when you hear this, your mind is just going to explode. And if you're in the Francis Howell School District, Godspeed, ladies and gentlemen. So what a state audit has turned up that the Francis Howell School District failed to adequately vet a Kansas educator that was hired as superintendent last year. So when Scott released this report today, they said that there were warning signs before the district hired this guy. His name is Mike Dominguez. No references from his most recent employer.
What?
Are you kidding me? A resignation from his last position. There were typos in his application.
What?
So the auditor said the enormous amount of money paid out to a man who never worked a day for the district certainly raised a lot of questions for taxpayers and numerous red flags from my office. So what happened is they got a deal with him, and they all signed an NDA so they can't talk about it. Last July, he never works. He never takes the job. So this is 10 months after this happened. They gave him a lump sum of $229,166.67 in exchange for his agreement to resign. I want that to happen to me. I want someone to come to me. I will freaking quit right now if you write me a check for $229,000. I promise you, if my bosses are listening. But what happened is that this is where Scott Fitzpatrick, who, by the way, is up for re-election, and he's a guy that just does his job, right? He's nothing fancy. He just does his job, and that's what the state auditor should do. There should be no politics involved in this. This is outrageous behavior by this school district. You have a situation where these kids are already behind, you know, because of COVID, and even beyond COVID, the educational numbers that we see in public schools in particular are not very good. But 4 days before this guy's supposed to start last July, the officials announced that he ain't going to begin work because there are unforeseen circumstances.
And what don't know.
They won't say. So the board approved the resignation, the separation agreement. About a month later, there were unanimous votes. $230,000 payment was in addition to what he got when he was on leave. So he got $250,000. And then in the Post story, they say the agreement gagged Francis Howell officials from explaining the departure. It stated that if asked about any employment dispute involving Dominguez, district employees and board members agreed to respond. Dr. Dominguez resigned from the Francis Howell School District effective on July 31st, 2025. I cannot comment further on a confidential personnel matter. Well, you know what? You should be forced to comment because this is taxpayer dollars.
Agreed.
This is outrageous. If you're in the the Francis Howell School District, you should demand either the school board tells you what happened,
yes,
or they should all resign, because they can't vet him, but Scott Fitzpatrick's office goes in and finds out that they had a lot of closed-door meetings to talk about this guy. Legal counsel for the district told the auditor's office that the board believed that his performance was discussed at those meetings. He provided the board with responses to concerns and references from the Kansas district. He denied misrepresenting himself, but obviously they had a big problem with him. And I guess the only way they could get him to go away without paying the lawyers, because then he was going to say, wrongful termination, is they cut him a check for $230,000. That is unreal. Now, this is the other thing about this. These school boards and, municipalities and governments, you know what they do? And this is the biggest scam in the world. No offense to my consultant friends out there. They hire consultants and they pay them hundreds of thousands of dollars to find the right candidates,
yes,
for these positions. In this case, they probably didn't send hundreds of thousands, but probably tens of thousands of dollars. And the company that they hire, School Exec Connect, which is out of Chicago, doesn't identify any issues. They do background checks that don't reveal anything. And then all of a sudden they realize right away,
okay,
that something's wrong here.
But there are typos in something that an educator presents.
I didn't see.
What?
Okay, I'm going to have to read the full report from the auditor, because I didn't see any more reference to that in the Post-Dispatch article, but that's interesting, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Typographical errors in his first application. Wow. So, no, look, this is government accountability. This is the same reason that I'm trying to get answers from Valley Park about my road project. This is taxpayer money. They just pissed away $250,000. Think about if you're a teacher in that district. You okay with that? Because guess what? They're paying the next guy probably more money, or the next chick.
Or your students go to school there and your tax money is going to that? What?
Outrage.
Get more at 971talk.com. Hey, what's up, flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.